Welcome, everyone, to this episode of the Liberty Ventures podcast, live from Richard Branson's Necker Island at the First Principle Business Summit. I'm just so excited for us to be talking with John Cochran, the CEO of Human Good, who is just an amazing conscious capitalist, starting some incredible new ventures in the senior well-being or age or successful aging space, as you described earlier today, that I love. John, thank you so much for being here and sharing your insights with the community.
Glad to be here. Glad to have a conversation, and particularly glad to be here at Necker Island.
We've known each other for a little while now, so I know a bit about your background. But for everyone who is just meeting you for the first time, I'd love for you to share your story. What's led to who you are and what you're doing today?
You know, it's such an interesting question as you look back on careers and opportunities that present themselves. I came out of college with a degree in political science. And it turns out, what would you know, all the good political science jobs were taken that year. And so I didn't know what to do. And, you know, what do you do with a poli sci degree? You teach or you go to law school. I knew I didn't want to pursue an academic career, so I went to law school and got my, got through law school. I didn't love law school. I wish I'd been in business school, right? So I realized early on I had a business orientation, but I was in law school, got through law school, started working for a large law firm, and was reasonably happy, by which I mean I was miserable, but I was no more miserable than everybody else. And so I'm practicing law, and I'm working in real estate and zoning and land use. I'm on vacation in Florida. My in-laws have a dinner for a group they were hosting at the Boca Raton Club in Boca Raton, Florida. And they asked my wife and I if we wanted to join them with this group for dinner. And I thought, well, you know, free dinner at the Boca Club. Sure, why not? So I signed up, and my father-in-law said, there's a guy there who develops senior housing. And he said, I think you'll like him. And so I'll make sure that you get introduced to him. This guy's name was John Erickson. And so my wife, Lisa, and I sat next to John and Nancy Erickson 30 years ago, and we struck up a conversation, and I just loved both John and Nancy. They were just phenomenal people. John was describing his vision of what this third half of life should be, 75 plus, a time of vitality and purpose and engagement and full living, where you take the accumulated wisdom and the experiences of everything you've worked for, and you kind of move from success to significance. And you live with purpose and vitality. And he's talking about all of this. And I have no interest whatsoever in working in senior housing. I mean, none. but I have an interest in doing zoning and land use work. So I'm thinking, I'll get this guy as a client for my law practice. So I invite myself. We're living in Chicago. I invite myself to his headquarters in Baltimore. He has one community at the time. And I said, you know, I'd love to learn more about your business and, you know, talk about, you know, maybe we can do something together. And he kind of smiles slightly and says, sure, come out anytime. So I come out and I sit in John's office and we visit for about 45 minutes. And he's waxing rhapsodic about this idea of this third half of life and how engaged and purposeful and joyful and intentional this should be. And he's excited. I'm excited. And finally says, you know, do you want to take a tour of the retirement community? And I said, you know what? I don't have to. I'm sold on the vision and I'd, you know, love to do some work with you. He said, you don't have a clue what I do for a living. You don't understand at all what I've been talking about. You got to see it to believe it. I said, by golly, you're right, John. I do have to see it to believe it. Let's go take a tour. So we took a tour of this community that was 1,600 independent living units scattered among about 14 buildings. So you can imagine this campus on a 100-acre former seminary, linked buildings on this, you know, of this retirement community. And we're walking through this community, and there are 2,000 people living in independent living alone. That's not healthcare. That's just the independent living apartments. And it was like a human ant farm. There were just people everywhere. Men's chorus over here, women's chorus over here, mixed chorus over here, jazz band over here, Russian literature being studied over here, Tai Chi being done over here. I mean, everywhere you looked, people were engaged with life. And what was interesting is these weren't 55-year-olds. They were 75, 80, 85, 90-year-olds. So, you know, some of these people were as fit as you and I. Some of them were using walkers. A few were in wheelchairs. So, you know, you saw all kinds of physical abilities. But I walked through this community and I thought, I have never seen anything like this. I've never seen a place where people are thriving living in community like this. And that was the first thing that struck me on this tour. The next two things that struck me is, as we walked through the hall, John was greeting his residents. And that didn't really surprise me. But what surprised me is he actually knew who they were. So he'd walk through and say, hey, Alexander, how are you? How are the grandkids doing? I know they were here last week. And it was the kind of interaction that told me he actually knew Alexander and knew you as a person. not just you as a client, as a customer. And I was really, I was kind of taken by that. I thought, well, this guy's really sincere about his vision of knowing people and helping to pull out their best life. The other thing that really struck me is he had the same kind of interaction with his team members. He walked through and said, hey, Alexander, how are you? How are the kids doing? I know, you know, has your kid gotten into college yet? And he's having these conversations that, again, tell me it's not the anonymous CEO tour where someone goes through and waves and looks the other way because, you know, they don't want to interact with anybody. He knew and liked these people, and they knew and liked and respected him. That was, you can't fake that stuff. And I was just blown away. So we go to lunch, and my, you know, my eyes are this big, my jaw's hanging on the floor. And at lunch, John says, well, you know, I don't need more lawyers, John. You guys are a dime a dozen. I can find you on any street corner. This is an exact quote from John. He says, but what I need is I need people who get the mission and vision and can help me carry this forward. And at that point in time, I said, listen, if you got a job for me here, I'd love to come work for you. To this day, I can't imagine what compelled me to say that to him. So now I'm flying home to Chicago. I'm having dinner with my wife in the apartment we have just spent a year and a half renovating. We moved out, bought two apartments, gutted them, redesigned them, built our dream home. We'd moved in 9 months earlier. And I'm having this conversation with my wife about how the trip to Baltimore went. And so I'm having the same conversation with her that I'm now having with you. I'm excited. She's excited. I'm smiling. She's smiling. And she says at one point, well, obviously, you know, you got him as a client. I've kind of seen you get this excited before. I know how this is playing out. I have to say, yeah, you know, funny, not exactly how it worked out.
A little reversed there.
He got me as an employee and we're moving to Baltimore. And my wife, God bless her, said, listen, if this is going to be meaningful, purposeful work for you, this is going to bring you joy as well as, you know, help you make a living, I'm all for it. It'll be an adventure. What's the worst thing that can happen? And what a gift that was from her. That was the first gift I got. So she was totally on board. 6 weeks later, I had wrapped up my law practice. We had our apartment on the market. I was living in John's spare bedroom, commuting to work at a retirement community and making 90% less than I was making in the law firm. So I got a 90% pay cut. So this was insane on every level, except the second big gift I got was I went to the attorney. The partner who worked right next door to me had a banking practice. He was probably... yeah, about my age now. He's maybe, you know, in his, I don't know, early 50s, a little younger than me. And his name was also John. Everyone in the story is named John. So I went to this other John. I said, you know, John, you're not going to believe this. This is just crazy. As I tell the story, I can't believe I'm doing this, but here's what I'm doing. And I laid out the story for him. Again, big book of business, very successful, very well-regarded attorney. He gets up and closes his door and he says, I just want to tell you, I'm jealous. I hate my job. I go home every night because I refuse to miss dinner with my family. I have dinner with my family, pull myself off in my study, work until 11 o'clock. I work half days on Saturdays. And Sunday, I get a hollow feeling in the pit of my stomach and I dread coming into work. But he said, I've got kids in college. I've got two mortgages and I don't know how to get out of this. And that was actually one of the best gifts I've ever gotten in my professional life because that gave me this sense of, that is exactly what I don't want to be doing with my life. I want to marry purpose to success, but it's got to have both. And I realized that, you know, for me, that was critical. And for him to say that to me enabled me to close that door on a law practice and know I'd made the right decision.
There are so many remarkable points from that story, from the serendipity of you meeting
I know, right?
This guy in Boca Raton to... him persuading you to give up the practice and go work for him to...
yeah, the 90% pay cut. Like, that is insane. Who does that?
That's the power of purpose right there.
You it is all the power of purpose.
That had purpose that you were energized by, yep. That you were willing to throw yourself into with the belief that it was going to be successful in the long run as well. Thing.
So when I was working in the law firm, you know, you'd work every night till 9, 10 o'clock. You'd work at least one day on the weekend. You were in and out every Saturday. And I resented... every time I was there past 5 o'clock, I resented going in on Saturdays and giving up my free time, and especially being newly married. I just hated all of it. I go to work in senior housing. I go to a purpose-focused engagement. I am working harder today in my CEO role than I ever worked as a lawyer. And I work all the time, but I love what I do. And I've told people, and this is true, I've never had a bad day. I've had, we've all had plenty of days that didn't go according to any kind of plan, but I've never had a, literally never had a day I didn't wake up eager, happy, excited to do this work. And I am more excited today by what lies ahead for this field than I was when I got into it. And as you get a little older and you interact with more people in business, you realize how few people in business get to say that, but how many more could get to say that if they married purpose to their work.
And a big part of that clearly is comes with age and experience for you to realize that and for others to do the same thing, which is why your work and helping people age successfully is so important here. Now, you used that term earlier today, actually, and I'd love for you to expand upon that because I think it's such a fascinating concept that not many people really think about.
We don't think about this. It's curious, right? Because you think about how we architect our lives. You know, you move to the right neighborhood and try to get your kids into the right preschool, and then you try to get the right education for them, and then you plan for the right college or trade school for them, and so you have a whole plan, and then you get into your career, and you have a whole career plan. You may have a coach, and we really think this through. You know, move here, do this, get this skill, acquire this, take this opportunity, and we're so intentional about so much of our lives, who we marry, how we pursue our work lives, how we pursue our academic lives, how we raise our families. And then it gets to retirement, and what happens? At some point, we step off the treadmill. And it's like we have no plan at all. We have no thought. We have no idea of what this time in life can be. And part of that is, I think, because the concept of retirement is relatively new. If you look back through history, again, as I said this morning, you pretty much just died on the job. I mean, people didn't live typically into their 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, and they weren't healthy if they did.
Absolutely.
Well, today, thanks to significant advances in medicine, thanks to significant advances in sanitation, we're living much longer, and we're generally, and I'll qualify this, generally living much healthier. This is a time that should be the culmination of everything we've been working for. This should be the most purpose-driven time of life. And so as we look at what a good retirement, what healthy aging looks like, it's obviously going to look different for different people. You're going to have different life goals than I am, than someone else is going to have. But it's about helping people realize their best life and acquire the tools to live that life as fully as they can. And by the way, that has to do with, you know, we believe that people should age with enthusiasm, confidence, and security, regardless of physical, social, or economic circumstance. And why that matters is, I believe there's a best day for a healthy, go-go 85-year-old, and I believe there is a healthy best day for someone who's living with dementia in a memory support unit of ours. It's a question of aligning with that person's needs and abilities and designing and helping implement that best day for them.
Now, the challenge in that, we as individuals don't seem to think about what aging successfully means for us and setting our lives up for that, even though we're so intentional in other areas of our life. But not enough businesses have thought about how to help people do the same thing
at all
right now. And that's something that you're tackling now, not only with Human Good, but you're putting together a fund and a venture lab, studio in order to help grow efforts in this space now too, right?
We are, because we realize there's so much more to be done and there's an urgency with getting it done. And it's everything from the individual's plan for how I want to, and I won't even say retire. Retire is such an awful word. You know, if you look it up, it means withdraw, recede, fall back. Who do you know who aspires to do that when they leave employment? So I think of like a refirement, if you will, a reorientation of life away from you know, kind of your traditional work life to maybe something more meaningful. How can we help seniors plan? And that's everything from vocation to physical well-being to emotional well-being to spiritual well-being, and give them the tools and resources to age successfully on their terms. Similarly, I think, and you mentioned this in your comment, we don't help families support aging. And so I see this, and this is a huge cost drag on our economy, kids caring for parents and grandparents who are diverted from their work efforts because they don't know where to turn to find resources to help their parents navigate healthcare, navigate dementia, navigate a fall, navigate their best life. And so on many fronts, we need to find a way to address this.
So how are you figuring out ways to address this?
So
how are you structuring all of this?
So what we're trying to do is we have 125 residential communities that serve seniors. We serve very wealthy seniors in traditional retirement communities. we serve very, very low-income seniors in our affordable housing communities. And in those communities, while we don't do a lot of direct service provision, what we do is we do service coordination. So we'll connect them to activities, to Meals on Wheels, to veteran support. And so we have a whole network, support network for low-income residents. We have a whole list of support networks and activities and services for higher-income folks. There are a couple of things we're focused on. One is, how do we serve the folks in the middle, the forgotten middle, who can't afford or don't want a traditional community, don't want to, you know, leave their homes, don't qualify for a subsidy? What do we do for them? And so what we're trying to do is leverage the expertise we have on both ends of the barbell, understanding what successful aging looks like, understanding the tools that we can bring, and we're trying to find ways to bring more of those tools and resources to more people in non-traditional settings. So I don't need you to come live in my community to be able to serve you and help you age well.
There's so much potential in doing this. And the way that you're setting up, you're investing in companies that are starting to do this. You're looking to come up with ideas with the studio to build these up. And what else are you doing in order to set up the structure? That's what I really want to get into.
So you mentioned the venture fund. And the venture fund we put together because we started working with early stage companies that understood demographics, understood some of the needs in our field related to aging. So they might be working on falls. They might be working on social connection. They might be working on wound management, for example. Whatever it is, we saw a bunch of early stage companies who identified problems in our sector and went to work on them. And so what we realized is they understood the problem. They understood technology. They did not understand the market. They did not understand seniors. They didn't have access to the market. And so as we were spending time with him, at one point I turned to my leadership team and said, look, for all the time we're spending, you know, trying to help Alexander's company, you know, reach our market, we should get paid for that. And so we set up the venture fund to be a strategic investor, but also have an ownership stake in some of these companies working in our field. And the premise of it was that we would bring specialized expertise and market access to early stage companies. And we were hoping we'd be seen as a strategic advisor. I will say that has turned out to be more true than we ever expected. So while we went out searching for deals, very soon we got a reputation and deals started seeking us out. Rounds that were closed got opened up to us in some cases because they needed our access and expertise. And so we thought that was just a kind of a marriage made in heaven. Now, we're learning how to work with early stage companies. Early stage companies are learning how to work with elders and folks in our field. So there's a learning curve on both sides. But the next piece we realized is there are still...
Really quick, actually. So a lot of these companies, are they already focused on the senior space, or are they doing other things that you're realizing can be applied to the senior space?
A little bit of both. So in some cases, we're working with a company, for example, that has a fall detection system that we've deployed in memory support. So if someone falls, it will help alert us to whether it's a real fall, not a real fall, whether an intervention is needed or not needed. So that's one example of a market-specific company that we're working with that targeted our population. Another example, though, that's kind of interesting is we're working with BioBot, which is a wastewater testing company that tests wastewater discharge for the presence of pathogens. Now, why does that matter? Well, it matters in schools because they can look for illicit drugs. In our case, it matters because we look for things like a norovirus outbreak, or, you know, can we catch a COVID outbreak before it clinically manifests somewhere. So you may not even be aware that, you know, you've got norovirus, but if I can detect it in the wastewater, I can intervene much earlier. Early intervention in many cases, and particularly with the elderly, means a far better likelihood of an outcome. So we work with bat disease. And just as importantly, this technology can pick up early signs of depression before the clinically manifest. Why does that matter? Well, this is a generation that, one, depression is more prevalent than people think as people age. And we're still dealing with a generation that has some degree of stigma around talking about this. Well, now if we give them a tool to get it bully and capture, again, we can do an intervention before the clinically manifests in some negative way. So in the playground, what we're trying to do is put together this longevity and vitality center that, you know, we'll launch with maybe 5, 6, 7 different assessments. And over time, we'll figure out these three matter, these two nobody cares about, these four things we're adding in. And so it's going to be
our effort to find a way to kind of democratize and measure well living. And I think that's so interesting because everyone knows about the fund structure, the lab structure, the playground structure sounds like a new concept. Is this something you took from someone else or you came up with as you started to get into the venture space?
We came up with this ourselves. I mean, other people may be doing it, so I can't claim any kind of brilliance credit here. But we came up with this because I realized nobody in our space has pulled this together yet. So there's nowhere for you to go and get a holistic view of how prepared them. And so this really came in our case out of just pure necessity. We're not seeing this anywhere else. And I think it's not just me. I think people are hungry. I think they're hungry for tools and resources that are more than just vapors and anecdotes. They're real. They're numbers you can put to it. Why don't people stick with diets? It's because they don't know if they're making improvements. So what we want to do is give people an assessment, a personalized intervention, so they can assess whatever they want. We might have 20 different assessments. You might take 8. I may take a different 7. Someone else may take a different 5. Someone else may take 12. But you take whatever assessments you want to take, find out where you are, determine where you want to be, where you can be, design personalized interventions for that. But the key is going to be rapid reassessment so you know you're making progress.
Brilliant. So, John, this has been a fascinating conversation. I've learned a lot about the structure you're putting together and the importance of successfully aging and why more businesses should get into that. What I always like to ask at the end of these is, and to provide context, I think one of the best things people can do, if they want to connect with someone, they want to learn a new industry, they want to do something different, is to reach out to someone they want to talk to and offer to give value, offer to help with something.
Sure.
So with everything that you're doing, anyone listening is excited about this, wants to get more into the space or wants to connect with you, What's something that they could offer to do for you? What value could they give for you that would get you excited to respond?
You know, I think what would get me excited is someone who has an idea they can marry to what I just talked about. The person is sitting out there and said, I know exactly what he means. He needs X, Y, or Z. And they can call me, they can email me, they can text me, they can raise a white flag, put my name on it. I'll talk to anybody anytime. As I said this morning, the one thing I know for sure is I'm not smart enough to do this on my own. I love talking to smart people. I love talking to engaged people who have the same vision, same orientation, the same drive, and want to share those thoughts. Happy to talk to anybody.
Fantastic. John, thank you so much for everything you're doing and for joining the con.
Thank you. And thank you for hosting us. It's great to be together.
It's great to have you here.